Good morning, everybody. Everybody, welcome to the Public Safety Commission. It's good to have you all here today. Roll call, Commissioner Blair.
Here, and I'd just like everyone to know that that sweet little 60s white Mustang in the parking lot is mine. I'm just letting Wainwright drive it today.
Commissioner Long.
Here.
Commissioner Stodgill.
Here.
Commissioner Wainwright.
I'm here, and Commissioner Blair and I will discuss this behind closed doors.
And I'm Chairman Mock. A quorum of the Public Safety Commission is present, and the public meeting of the Commission is called to order. Will now proceed. The time is 10 o'clock in the morning. The location of this meeting is the Criminal Law Enforcement Auditorium at 6100 Guadalupe, as posted in the agenda. We will now consider the agenda items that have been posted for this meeting. We'll begin with an invocation by Chaplain Furman Carpenter. Please rise.
Let's pray to God. Our heavenly and most righteous Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for another time that we can come to the Public Safety Commission, hear the things that are on the agenda, see the presentations given. We thank you so much, Father, for our commissioners, for the excellent job they do, for the reputations of excellence that they have in their lives and working with the overseeing of the Department of Public Safety. We thank you, Father, for our director of the Department of Public Safety and his command staff, and all the men and women of the Department of Public Safety, Father, that work together to help this be the best law enforcement agency in the world. Father, please watch over and care for our men and women in uniform that wear the badge every day, Father. Please put your shield of protection around them. Please, Father, take care of them and bring them home safe every night. And through all these things, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. We'll now have the pledges by Corporal Billy Rain.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to the Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
Thank you. Please be seated. Our next item on the agenda is the approval of the Public Safety Commission meeting minutes held on February 15th of 2024.
So moved.
I'll second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Blair. Motion passes. We'll now move on to presentations. Director McCraw.
And Chairman, if you'll join me, we'll make the presentation.
The following employees will be presented a certificate in recognition of their 25 years of service and accomplishment with the Texas Department of Public Safety. Philip Adkins. Joseph Correa.
Thank you.
Kelly Crable. Marissa Furman. Lisa Gavia. Wanda Pearson. And Sue Tan.
Thank you.
following employees will be presented a certificate in recognition of their 30 years of service and accomplishment with the Texas Department of Public Safety. Rebecca McManus Mata. Following employee will be presented a certificate in recognition of her 35 years of service and accomplishment with the Texas Department of Public Safety, Elizabeth Steinman. Presented a certificate in recognition of their 40 years of service and accomplishment with the Texas Department of Public Safety, Virginia Saldana. Joanne Scarborough.
You all
The following employee will be presented a certificate in recognition of his 45 years of service and accomplishment with the Texas Department of Public Safety. Johnny Berkeley. On June 12, 2022, Trooper Lyndon Johnson was involved in a multi-event motor vehicle crash. While completing a crash investigation and arresting a subject for DWI on the President George Bush Turnpike, Trooper Johnson's vehicle was struck by another vehicle whose driver was later found to be intoxicated. Johnson had placed an arrested subject from the first crash in the front passenger seat of his patrol vehicle and then moved the patrol vehicle partially into the right lane to provide traffic control for the tow truck operator. A vehicle struck Trooper Johnson's patrol unit, pushed it into the tow truck, and pinned Johnson and the arrested subject inside the patrol car. Trooper Johnson sustained multiple injuries in the crash. The driver that struck Trooper Johnson's vehicle exited his own vehicle and began to walk across the highway, at which time he was struck and killed by another vehicle. The driver of that vehicle fled the scene but was located 2 days later. In recognition of his great personal sacrifice and professional performance of law enforcement duties, during which he sustained serious bodily injuries, Trooper Lyndon Johnson is hereby awarded the Purple Heart. On April 19, 2023, Texas Ranger Special Response Team Staff Sergeants Matthew Davenport, Justin Knowlton, and Tyler Lewis assisted Dallas PD with a warrant service that was part of a Criminal Investigations Division investigation involving the illegal trafficking of fentanyl, heroin, and crack cocaine. While the on-scene investigation developed, several arrests were made, as well as numerous investigative detentions. While the investigation transpired, a female subject became unresponsive and appeared to be overdosing on an opiate. While Dallas PD made requests for a medic, Davenport, Knowlton, and Lewis promptly went into action and began assessing the subject. She was not moving, her color was pale, her lips were blue, and her breathing was shallow. The SRT staff sergeants calmly, professionally, and effectively communicated with each other and applied the first of three doses of Narcan, which was not effective. After the second dose was administered, the subject's condition appeared to worsen and she remained unresponsive. After a third dose was given and a sternum rub was conducted, the subject became responsive. EMS personnel arrived and transported the subject to a local hospital where medical personnel advised that, without the intervention of Staff Sergeants Davenport, Nalton, and Lewis, the subject would not have survived. In recognition of their significant and professional response to a life-threatening situation resulting in the saving of a life, Staff Sergeants Matthew Davenport, Justin Nalton, and Tyler Lewis are hereby awarded the Life-Saving Award.
Thank you.
On June 12, 2023, Special Agent Henry Schultz was assigned an investigation regarding a missing juvenile from Corpus Christi that family members feared was in grave danger. Agent Schultz connected with the family, uncovered critical details that had been overlooked by the initial investigating agency, and meticulously analyzed video surveillance from surrounding businesses near the victim's last known location. By extracting crucial leads from the victim's social media accounts and communication devices, Schultz was able to pinpoint the victim's location in Florida. Agent Schultz worked closely with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement and the Alawacha Sheriff's Department to obtain a search warrant. On July 25th, the Sheriff's Department and FDLE investigators executed the warrant, rescued the victim, and apprehended the primary suspect. The victim was found in dire physical condition, was under the influence of narcotics, including methamphetamine and fentanyl, and weighed only 75 pounds. The victim indicated she was drugged, beaten repeatedly while being sexually assaulted, had a gun pointed at her head, and a knife held to her throat. Investigators corroborated this information through seized digital evidence. Medical personnel indicated a high probability the victim would not have survived much longer if she had not been rescued. The juvenile victim was reunited with her mother and returned home. In recognition of his significant and professional response to a life-threatening situation resulting in the saving of a life, Special Agent Henry Schultz is hereby awarded the Life-Saving Award. September 23, 2023, Trooper Aaron Doyle was on patrol when he was informed of a single vehicle crash approximately 1 mile from his location. As Doyle arrived on the scene, he observed a passenger vehicle that had left the roadway and struck a pole. The driver was trapped in the vehicle and was suffering from a severe laceration to her left arm. Trooper Doyle made contact with an off-duty Fort Worth PD officer who was attempting to slow the bleeding by applying pressure to the injury. Doyle immediately retrieved a tourniquet from his patrol unit and successfully applied it, which stopped the bleeding. Fire department and EMS personnel arrived shortly thereafter and were able to focus on extricating the subject, who required a blood transfusion at the scene. EMS transported the subject to a local hospital where she received further medical treatment. In recognition of his significant and professional response to a life-threatening situation resulting in the saving of a life, Trooper Aaron Doyle is hereby awarded the Life-Saving Award.
Thank you.
On November 23, 2023, Criminal Investigations Division Lieutenant Daniel Martinez and Special Agents Benjamin Crowley and Carlos Molina were assigned to Operation Lone Star in El Paso. While conducting knock-and-talks at a motel in attempts to locate human smuggling stash houses, agents and troopers heard cries coming from a nearby room. After making entry, they discovered an unresponsive male on the bathroom floor with a faint pulse, blue lips, and not breathing. Realizing the subject had overdosed on fentanyl, CID personnel began providing life-saving measures. Throughout the course of 12 minutes, five doses of Narcan were administered, and agents took turns providing CPR while troopers obtained additional doses of Narcan and coordinated with EMS personnel en route to the scene. Due to the life-saving efforts, the subject's pulse returned, and he began breathing again prior to EMS arriving on the scene. The subject was transported to a local hospital for further treatment. In recognition of their significant and professional response to a life-threatening situation resulting in the saving of a life, Lieutenant Daniel Martinez and Special Agents Benjamin Crowley and Carlos Molina are hereby awarded the Life-Saving Award. On December 6, 2023, Sergeant Ted Riojas arrived at the scene of a crash that had just occurred. As he approached the vehicle, a female was sitting in the driver's seat holding her left forearm. A significant amount of blood could be seen on the seat and on the subject's clothes. As Sergeant Riojas spoke with the subject, she was incoherent at times and drifted in and out of consciousness due to the loss of blood. Riojas immediately deployed his tourniquet and applied it to the subject's arm, in addition to applying quick clot directly onto the wound, wrapping it with gauze, and applying direct pressure. These efforts stopped the bleeding, and the subject became more coherent. As EMS and fire department personnel arrived on the scene, Sergeant Riojas provided a patient report, and the subject was transported to a local hospital where she underwent emergency surgery for a torn radial artery. In recognition of his significant and professional response to a life-threatening situation resulting in the saving of a life, Sergeant Ted Riojas is hereby awarded the Life-Saving Award. On December 7th, 2023, Trooper Alex Shelton was having breakfast with coworkers when he suddenly heard someone begin to cough loudly and observed commotion in the back corner of the restaurant. Trooper Shelton immediately proceeded toward the crowd and observed an elderly male coughing vigorously and gasping for air. Shelton pushed through the crowd and proceeded to perform the Heimlich maneuver, successfully dislodging the blockage from the subject's airway. The subject was able to breathe again and his normal skin tone returned. Trooper Sheldon remained with the subject until EMS personnel arrived on the scene and evaluated the subject's condition. In recognition of his significant and professional response to a life-threatening situation resulting in the saving of a life, Trooper Alex Shelton is hereby awarded the Life-Saving Award. On February 9th, 2024, Special Operations Staff Sergeant Juan Lopez, while working Operation Lone Star, overheard radio traffic regarding a vehicle being loaded with migrants in Roma. As troopers moved in to arrest the smugglers, the suspects fled in the vehicle, ultimately driving into the Rio Grande River. The tide carried the vehicle downriver and further away from the shore. The smugglers abandoned the vehicle along with the migrants and swam to the Mexico side of the river. Sergeant Lopez observed the three migrants still trapped in the vehicle and immediately took action. Lopez removed his gear, grabbed his state-issued Swift water bag, and swam out to the vehicle. Sergeant Lopez rescued the migrants from the car and safely brought them to the bank on the U.S. side of the river. In recognition of his significant and professional response to a life-threatening situation resulting in the saving of lives, Staff Sergeant Juan Lopez is hereby awarded the Life-Saving Award. In 2014, the Department of Public Safety Pipe and Drum Corps was founded by a core group of Highway Patrol Honor Guard members, and since its inception has played a significant role of in-line-of-duty funerals, official ceremonies, and other important events, adding a sense of solemnness and respect to these occasions. The number of hours spent to perfect the Pipe and Drum Corps varies depending on factors such as the member's skill level, complexity of the music, and dedication of its members. Balancing the demands of their duties as sergeants and troopers of the Highway Patrol with their responsibilities and commitment to the Pipe and Drum Corps is very challenging. Practicing hours, weeks, months, or even years to achieve a high level of precision and musicality in their performances is a testament to the passion and dedication of each member. Over the years, the Pipe and Drum Corps has performed at 8 department-commissioned personnel line-of-duty funerals, 14 line-of-duty funerals for other Texas law enforcement agencies and public officials, 3 United States judge investiture ceremonies, 22 recruit graduations, numerous memorial events, opening ceremonies for state and national law enforcement association conferences, and high-profile venues such as Dallas Cowboys football games and the Houston and Fort Worth rodeos. In 2019, the Corps received 5th place at the National Police Week Pipe and Drum Competition in Washington, D.C., and took 3rd place in 2022. Those commended for their hard work and dedication include Pipe and Drum Corps Commander Sergeant Terry Barnhill, Sergeants Kenneth Morgan and Tamala Snyder, Troopers Harold Estep, Christopher Taylor, Tyler Morton, Joel Hanks, Michael McHale, Corey Countryman, Joseph Sherman, Shirley McNally, Alina Gallardo, and Rika McKee. They are hereby awarded the unit citation.
Safety Commission is now reconvened in open session. The time is 10:55 in the morning. We'll now move on to public comment. Sophie, is there anybody wishing to give public comment? Anybody in the room wishing to give public comment? Hearing none, public comment is now closed. We'll move over to the director's report, item 7 on the agenda. Director McCraw.
Chairman, commissioners. We're going to today have a case brief on a traffic stop. Texas State Troopers, as you know, every day around the clock, are making traffic stops, and like last year, over 1.5 million to be exact. And this is one more example of why those are important. And we'll go ahead and let turn it over to Highway Patrol to conduct the brief.
Good morning. My name is Kyle Bradley. I'm with Texas Highway Patrol, Region 7. I work nights here down in Region 7. So today I'm going to talk to you about an IPC stop that I had. These are the latest stats for 2023 for IPC. For IPC trained only right now. So you see there's 13 rescue children. And there's just the numbers that come back there of the 228 victims family members served. These are the recent stats. Again, these are only from IPC trained. My rescue happened in March of 2023. So as you see, that number there is for showing for a different region because it's going only represented for the IPC trained only. So March 30th at 0220 hours, my initial observations, I was parked right here in front of DPS headquarters facing North Lamar. I was parked there with my high beams perpendicular to traffic. I was basing it off of reactions of violators as they drove past my high beams. So it was a 2005 red Prius. He drove past, he had a major reaction. He went from sitting backward to seeing my headlights, sitting forward and then turning his head looking at me. Had an easy PC for the stop, he had a defective headlamp. So I let him drive forward with that reaction and I had PC for the stop, I followed him out. So initial contact, once I pulled him over, it was a male driver and a front passenger female that was sleeping. I put the quotations up there because while I was talking with the driver, the female continued to open up, crack her eyes open at me a little bit. So I could tell she was probably more than likely faking asleep. Car was a mess. There was dog, two cats inside there. They were apparently living out of the car. The driver was identified as Devin Carley. The passenger identified is his daughter. He was able to identify her correctly. The whole time while I was speaking to the driver, he was very, very nervous, talkative, just talking all over the place. He knew why I stopped him before I even could tell him why I stopped him. He says he's had multiple encounters with law enforcement. He's explaining to me that he's on hard times, he's living out of his car, he's working at DoorDash, and he cannot present his driver's license at this moment. So while he was searching for his driver's license, he's looking all over, he opens up his center console, slams it shut real quick. It was a matter of seconds. What I believed I observed was a glass pipe, as you can see in the picture there. And that glass pipe is what I was thinking was more likely to be a meth pipe, more than likely. He's still talkative. I get him out of the car, tell him I don't want to wake up his daughter. I have some more questions to ask him. I began to build rapport with him, started asking him just more questions. He was able to find a picture of his driver's license, a picture of his daughter's social security, and we just started talking. So then I began to ask him questions of no consequence and then began asking him questions of consequence. I got reactions whenever I asked him questions of consequence. He started getting nervous, started getting quiet, started looking down. I asked about drugs. He started giving me reactions about meth and marijuana. And once I confronted him about the pipe after he said he had nothing illegal inside the vehicle, he confirmed that he did have a marijuana pipe in there. And I asked him more questions. And then he started freaking out thinking he was going to jail for drug paraphernalia. And I was explaining to him that it's his class C citation only. And he kept saying he's going to jail. So through my training and experience with that, I know that there's more than likely something else I'm going to find inside that car if he's already thinking he's going to jail just for something I told him was going to be a citation. So my initial findings was the little bit of meth inside a glucometer bag. He had that inside the center console with the meth pipe. He also was telling me that he was HIV positive, so that kind of made it feel a little icky when you open up that bag and it's where they're using all the blood and stuff. So he had just that little bit of meth there. And so after I found that, I went ahead and placed him in custody. And then that's when everything started to unfold further. So when we're trying to figure out what to do with the daughter, CV1, she said that she had a stepmom that was close by that we can make that phone call. So while I'm trying to figure that out before I can contact CPS and do an impact check to see who we can actually place her with, the phone call was made. From the stepmom, she's did not want to do anything with them. She started saying allegations of sexual assault with her other daughter. Immediately, the driver starts freaking out, just saying that it's all unfounded and not true. And so I just politely just thanked her for the phone call and wrote down the phone number. I was going to call her later. And then that's when the grooming statement started being made by the driver to CV1. No one else loves you. I'm the only one that can take care of you. This is the only reason I'm here for you only. No one else can do it. So that's when I requested more troopers come help me out so we can get vests and CPS notified. And I started looking through this criminal history of the guy. Found he also had aggravated sexual assault of a child that he was convicted for. He was just recently just taken off the list because that happened when he was a juvenile. So I request the CID to respond to my location and once I continue digging further inside the car. These are some of the things I found inside the car. I found multiple bottles of lube throughout the car, also child's toys. There was clothing, the panties on the right picture there. Those are, I've raised them up, looked, and they fit, more than likely fit the child that was with them. There was residue also on there. The yellow bag in there, that is a bottle of petroleum jelly with no lid on it, and it looks like there's fingers just dabbing inside there. And so that's when everything started unfolding more. So this bag was also located underneath the driver's seat. That's the first part of opening it up and looking. And that's all the contents inside that bag. As you can see, there was a lot of stuff going on inside there. Fleshlights, dildos, multiple condoms. Also found in the car, just a voice recorder, hard drives, mushrooms, multiple drug paraphernalia, multiple child's toys. These are just the other items that were also found. So once CID arrived at the CX building so they can conduct interviews, CPS arrived, took custody of the child. And during their interviews, the driver admitted of using meth in front of the CV1, so I initially charged him with possession of a controlled substance and criminal child endangerment. I continued further investigation from the stepmother when she actually arrived on scene, and she brought, it would be CV2, to the location because she wanted to talk to somebody about what happened and sexual allegations. Once I got a statement from her and I got a phone number, I continued the investigation the next day. I continued making phone calls for approximately about 2 months. We were able to locate 6 other child victims from this man. Most of the victims were out of Williamson County. We had Special Agent Brandon Johnson switched over to the Rangers, and so Special Agent Taylor Errico took over the investigation. He's also Region 7 CID. Statement that was done at the last interview Errico had from the driver is asked what his favorite porn genre is, and his favorite porn genre is daddy-daughter porn. So right now, the total charges that we have right now on him is a third-degree felony for the POCS, second-degree felony for the PG2, state jail felony for abandoned, endangering child. Williamson County is following up with first-degree felony, continued sexual assault of children, multiple counts of second-degree felony, and indecency with a child by conduct. Right now, he's awaiting trial. He's been grand jury indicted. So this was a joint investigation from initially from my traffic stop. I was me, then a couple other troopers, Donna Fulllove with Vest, Region 7 CID, and then Region 7 Crime Analyst. There, everyone made their part and continued to help with the investigation throughout the time. Thank you for your time. If there's any questions.
No, thank you, but that's quite disturbing. But thank you for your excellent work on that.
Yeah, great job. We're proud of his actions.
Thank you.
I'm going to give a quick briefing on an overview of Operation Lone Star in terms of where we're at. Now, you know, obviously we produce, you know, weekly reports that you have access to, we share with you and also with others as well in terms of the number of criminal arrests, in addition to the numbers of seizures, whether it's drugs, apprehensions, referrals. And I just want to underscore a very important part of this. Clearly, the Department of Public Safety plays an important role. We've got experts, i.e. our Texas State Troopers, we've got special agents, we've got Texas Rangers, we've got special operation groups, we've got brush teams, we've got aircraft, aviation operations, we're doing UAV operations, and we're certainly doing tactical marine unit operations. And we're always, you know, surging back and forth to the areas where they're most likely going to see transnational criminal activity. And our people do a wonderful job in terms of detecting that transnational criminal activity and interdicting it. And they do that across regions, South Texas region and West Texas region, but all around the state, because they're not keeping, you know, when you smuggle people across, they're not trying to stay in the border regions. And the similar, same thing with drugs. The cartels are trying to move them on. They're working with transnational gangs, working with state-based gangs. And you know how it works again and again. So the overall numbers haven't changed dramatically since the last time we met, but just to go over them quickly, you know, over 41,000 criminal arrests
the Department of Public Safety has had. Over 10,000 of those were criminal trespassing. There's over 37,000 felony charges, and of course, referrals. When we say referrals, this means that individuals that we come in contact with refer to the U.S. Border Patrol. We don't have any state crimes on, and there's been over 500,000 people that we've been turned over to Border Patrol since the beginning of operations in March of 2021. I can tell you, since March of 2021, the number of apprehensions in the state of Texas across five Border Patrol sectors has been over 3.9 million to date. And those are the numbers that are caught. Those aren't the ones that you hear this term gotaways, ones that are known because either through detection, either through drawbridge operations or other electronic devices that detected traffic, and yet they weren't apprehended. So we know those numbers are at least double in terms that we've had to address in the state of Texas. And for so long, the center of gravity for smuggling in Texas was particularly human smuggling, was the Gulf Cartel in the Rio Grande Valley. That has changed. It moved west, and certainly you've heard of Del Rio, but then from Del Rio to Eagle Pass and Maverick County was, for a long time, the center of gravity for all smuggling nationwide. And the same thing, okay? Now it's further west, even. So today, the priority is for the state of Texas, and the concerns are is El Paso sector. And, of course, El Paso sector, unlike any other sector, it encompasses two states. You know, most of Texas covers half the New Mexico border, as you're aware. So there's some challenges. We talk about dealing with El Paso and New Mexico in that regard because the ability to cartels to in-run and move around some of the gate and fortifications in the El Paso, Texas area to New Mexico and back into El Paso. So obviously we've been engaged in that most recently. And you hear about Venezuelans, large numbers of Venezuelans coming into Texas. Well, that's really a new phenomenon. And of course, we've had over 480,000 Venezuelans apprehended in Texas since the beginning of this operation. And increasingly, that's a western El Paso sector area phenomenon. And of course, there's been, I think, recent reports in terms of the, we'll call it a situation in terms where the migrants cut through, because quite frankly, we've had to adapt operations. Because what has happened, as we've seen, is that the cartels, working with the Venezuelan gang in particular, Tren de Aguada, which is a Venezuelan prison gang, essentially, that has been operating transnational for a number of years, including South America and Central America, works closely with La Empresa, which is a gang that works with the La Línea, which is the enforcement arm of the Juarez cartel there in Chihuahua. So that's the challenge, and they're actually what they've been working on, moving Venezuelans across that area of operation. And they're a thinking enemy. They're always looking for ways to exploit things. And, of course, they're looking at gaps, and the cartels are trying to push them through because there's more on the way. And, of course, Texas is doing what it can to prevent, okay, smuggling of people and drugs between the ports of entry. And that's back and forth. And thankfully, the governor has also assigned the Texas National Guard have been key and of paramount importance in terms when we talk about the Operation Lone Star strategy, specifically hold the line operations, and even more specifically what we talked about long ago, infrastructure, having the infrastructure in place between the ports of entry. You know, not long ago, there was a breach of that because what they're deploying is wire cutters and instigators to be able to create gaps and try to push as many people through those gaps to get to the Gate 36 in one case, which there was a lot of media attention on when National Guard soldiers bravely were holding the line and were run over by hundreds of individuals that were being pushed through by the cartels working with some Venezuelan gang members. And you recall that, and of course they did get through that first line, but that was really legacy fencing. They didn't get through the second line, which was the wall that's already permanently structured around Gate 36. And more importantly, they didn't get away with it. And if I'm asking Colonel Martin to kind of update you in terms of what the department did with its resources to address that particular, including the rioting aspect of it. And if you don't mind, Colonel, you can take over.
Sure. Chairman, Commissioners, I think everybody saw the national news on March 21st when they had the surge there at Gate 36 in El Paso. First off, we had a pretty light footprint there because that's all federal property. So in the El Paso area, we've primarily been focused on stash houses and smuggling operations, which is a huge problem in the El Paso area. Following this incident, we immediately, when they breached the concertina wire, they were stopped at the permanent wall and taken into federal custody by Border Patrol. And so we assisted them with that process. From that point, we went back, and when I say we, our CID agents did a phenomenal job on this, a tremendous amount of work. There were over 425 individuals in that group. When you separate the children and family units in that, there was a lot of adult males. They were from all over the place, Ecuador, Cuba, El Salvador, Bolivia, Brazil. There were 114 of them from Colombia, but the vast majority were Venezuelans. So the first thing that CID did was they focused on the agitators that actually that cut the wire, that threw the hooks, that pulled the wire, that stomped on a National Guard, one of the soldiers. And that was 9 individuals. 7 of those were still in custody and were charged with felony rioting and felony criminal mischief. That was the very next day. 2 of those, for some reason, had been released really very quickly. And so we got warrants on them. One was had a sponsor in Arizona, and one had a sponsor in San Antonio. So they were charged with additional felonies, and then a couple of them were charged with assaulting the soldier. So then we started looking at the rest of them and really narrowed it down to, and there was a mixture of them. Some were in ERO custody, and then some were in Border Patrol's custody, still going through the processing. So when ERO is the enforcement removal operations. That's where they go to when they're going to be they're already processed and they're going for deportation. So we identified 214 that were still in custody that met the elements of the offense of rioting, which is a Class B. It's enhanced with a disaster declaration to a Class A. So the agents focused on them. And, of course, they'd been processed. We had all their identifiers and multiple videos from different angles. So our agents worked around the clock 24/7 for about a week and a half. And we actually arrested, charged, and took custody of 221 individuals and booked them into the El Paso County jail for rioting, in addition to the other arrest. So that 221, to book somebody, it's different in every county. El Paso is really pretty difficult. Their process out there is different, where they have to go through a mental health and a physical evaluation in addition to all the processing. So it takes about 4 hours to book an individual into the El Paso County Sheriff's Department, into their jail. So they worked, around the clock to make that happen. As of today, we've charged 328 individuals related to that one incident. Like I said, 221 of those have already been booked and processed. There's others that were released that will have warrants issued in TCIC, NCIC, and then to ensure that this didn't happen again, we searched additional troopers, SWAT, drone teams, AOD, and a CDMT, Civil Disbursement Management Team, our riot team, to the area, and TMD searched hundreds of soldiers. So joint operation with TMD to reinforce their forces on the ground. We're also training TMD to detain and make arrests, and training them in the use of less lethal weapons like the pepper balls. So a lot of people don't know, a couple of days after this incident, they attempted another breach, and we were able to push that off using the pepper ball and the FN-303 less lethal rounds. But in addition to that, you know, they're spread out. This is a large area. It's not confined to Gate 36. So there's 20 plus miles that have to be patrolled there. And so our drone teams have been very successful in identifying people that they come from these camps, they sneak up, and they start snipping the wire, and they work at it, because TMD has really reinforced that with a lot of concertina wire. But they'll work at it and cut it, and when they get a gap, they'll search through that gap, where our drone teams are identifying them, and then our SWAT and SRT, our special operators, are able to come in behind the wire and go arrest those individuals. And they don't realize that, you know, there's a group of 10 or 15 around this campfire. Well, we've already identified the one that was cutting the wire. So we'll come around, and we've made 21 of those arrests since this original breach. In addition to that, TMD is, you know, like I said, they've really ramped up their resources, which as a force multiplier, we can do more of the detecting, interdicting, and arresting, and let them hold the line and lay this wire that keeps them from traversing areas. They're always looking for a gap. And I will say in this whole process that Border Patrol and ERO have been more than cooperative in helping us identify, sharing information, sharing their videos, and transferring custody. So it was a large process. You know, they have all these in custody. They're wanting to release them sooner than later because they have more coming in. They separated them and allowed us to pick them up 30, 40 at a time so we can work through the processing around the clock and make these, you know, have some consequences for their actions rather than being processed and released. Any questions?
Chairman, I've got a quick question. First of all, great job. Thank you for that update. And this is probably to either one of you. Did a great job of apprehending and arresting. Do we see any evidence of where they're cutting the wire and they're through and gone before we are able to see them? Or are there successful cuts of the wire that we see that they're getting through?
There are some. Border Patrol, they have known gotaways by the thousands every week. So that's
the reason they keep trying it then. They know they're successful in some instances.
Sure, and then there's different. There's ones that want to get through and seek out Border Patrol. They believe they're going to be processed and released. Of course, if there's a state violation, that's the, you know, the, when you talk about the border security, the barriers, the infrastructure, you know, the technology, and the boots on the ground, what's missing is the consequence for entering illegally. And so if there's a state violation, we're filing it, regardless if it's criminal trespass, criminal mischief, or whatever the case might be, rioting. But there's a lot of them in that El Paso area. What we're seeing more and more, and our aircraft division has been reporting here recently, and you can tell the El Paso sector has many zones, and several of them are in New Mexico. And when you break it down by, so when you talk about the numbers in the El Paso sector, it looks pretty high. The vast majority of those, I think 70% of them are coming through actually in New Mexico.
Okay.
Yeah. At this point, you know, being from El Paso, Sullivan Park you hear of in New Mexico is essentially surrounded by El Paso. So they're looking for gaps there. Yeah. It's a challenge that TMD and DPS is looking at right now because clearly the governor wants it closed. You know, he didn't want any
and we get this
sneaking
question.
Around.
We get this question quite a bit. It's it really came home true, you know, to me about how vast our border is when somebody straightened. I think it was one of the RDs stretched it out, and it stretched from like Dallas all the way to Las Vegas is the length of our border. So just like you said, you know, I think the general public we're thinking it happens in certain, but it's such a vast. Yep. Area to cover down there. The other question I have, just as a public safety commissioner, I'm always concerned about our troopers out there. How's the morale? And I know we got people going in and out every month and going down the border. How's the general morale? That's tough duty down there. And
well, that's one of the challenges.
Everybody holding up?
Well, they do, and in spite of the challenges. And of course, we're always concerned about sustainability.
Yeah.
Especially when there's so many tasks, so many threats, so little time. Whether you're in Austin, Colony Ridge, you know, anywhere, you know, everyone wants more troopers and wants more special agents. And there's not a place that's had not been impacted by the border, frankly. So how do we be able to staff that? And, of course, we're doing surge operations. How do we do it? How do we augment? And clearly we have, you know, X amount assigned to South Texas and to West Texas. How do we supplement that, and as Colonel Martin talked about, bring in riot teams to be prepared, you know, for such events along the way. Being proactive requires positions, moving people from north to south, and of course, anytime we move somebody from north, it's an impact on them, it's an impact on those that we leave, and it's an impact on those communities. So we're mindful of that, and recognizing that the only real solution for us long term, of course, is an agency that is deemed significant with this mission to protect and serve Texas. We're just going to have to expand the number of resources, and keeping with that, as you know, eliminating vacancies is important, and being in a position to be able to hire more in the future is vitally important for that sustainability and to be able to address the number of different evolving threats in a state that's growing the size of Texas. And to that end, I was going to actually ask, you know, Colonel Goodson to brief us, you know, where we're doing on recruiting, because at the end of the day, you know, it goes to your point, morale. When we talk to these in-services right now, we recognize that we've been a lot of places, you know, especially when you have special sessions after special session. We have to move people around, and they're very good about it. But we want to find, you know, the solution to it is eliminating vacancies and expanding the number of personnel that we have. And, Colonel, if you don't mind, if you can get him an update on recruit school.
Yes, sir. Yes. Chairman, Commissioners, Walton Goodson, Deputy Director of Law Enforcement Services, for the record. This is a quick update. In a nutshell, we are doing outstanding, and probably we are seeing the best numbers that we have seen in the agency in the last 5 years. Very, really promising numbers for the overall health of the organization as we move forward. Just a couple numbers to share with you briefly. A24 is in week 11. We're still 108 strong in that class. They graduate August the 23rd. B24 has 1,759 applicants. We expect to start more than 120 on May the 20th of this year. C24 has 2,141 applicants, and they begin in August. A25 class is just open for application process, and the B25 school will be a modified school. We've had a great deal of
Okay, keep going. I just have a question when you're done.
A great deal of success with those modified schools. We expect that might be the first time, and of course, that's a 14-week all law enforcement school. This will be probably the first time that we start over 100 in one of those courses. So that's really, really promising. And there's a couple of things that's changed and happened that we feel that's really impacted that. One, a very kind legislature that's given us a $5,000 stipend. That's, I think, turned the corner. Something else unique has happened as well, and that is the collaboration between Highway Patrol and the Training Operations Division and the recruiting efforts. Not to mention, for the first time really in our history, we're giving guaranteed duty stations. And while that sounds like something we should have done a long time ago, it's an incredibly difficult and challenging lift, but Chief Rippey and his team have pulled that off, and that's also really kind of reshaping our ability to attract more quality candidates. So just going back to those numbers, we're back over 2,000 applicants per recruit class, which means we can be selective and really bring in the best and brightest, as well as fill recruit classes moving forward.
Would it be correct to assume that someone could have applied to both B and C24, or are those all unique numbers?
They're all unique.
Okay.
I'm sorry. What is the we have 2,000 applicants. What is the capacity? Is the capacity about 120?
Yes, sir. Typically, because of our range, and the capacity of our classroom, which is we can comfortably, you can put about 120 in our classrooms. You start to squeeze them. We've put 130, as many as 140 in the classroom. It just gets uncomfortable. But we're at a point where we need to be a little uncomfortable. Also, our range capacity and other things always been just a real limiting factor. We are going to, if we can increase past 120, we're going to do that moving forward and try to be creative where we put.
Okay, one follow.
We're going to try not to turn away qualified applicants.
Okay, that's that. Where I was going to go as a follow up is, if we did have more capacity, could we place more recruits out there? Yeah, if we had more qualified applicants.
We do.
We have more qualified. Yeah.
We're
need
not
a new
going
training
to turn
facility,
anybody away.
Right? Yeah.
And of course, some of those are overlapping too. What he's talking about. I think the highest number is 3 schools at one time at the academy.
In our history, sir, we've had as many in 2016, 2017. We ran 4 academies each of those years, and that's what we kind of hope to achieve in the next biennium and ask for consideration to run as many as 4 classes a year, so 4 a year. Eight a biennium.
We're going to leave it to you. We're going to support you as a commission as much as we can for recruiting and processing and getting troopers out there. Thank you very much, Walt.
Well, if you can give an update on the memorial.
Yes, sir. Also, so on May the 16th, as many of you know, I think invitations have already went out. We will have our DPS, our annual memorial at headquarters, but we're also going to include the dedication of the new DPS memorial during that time. If you have not seen the memorial or walked, there's 240 names on that memorial, and it's definitely a moving experience. So in the next couple of weeks, if you've seen it very recently, we should be putting in some landscaping and have most everything to the finish line by the time that that dedication actually occurs. Internally for the agency, we will be pushing out an internal messaging to invite everyone. Also, we'll do some invitations on all our social media platforms as well as live stream that event. It'll be something very, very moving for the agency for sure. Also, I should just mention that this is something that that Director McCraw has fought for his entire career here, and it has finally come to the finish line, and it's been through an incredible public-private partnership, and very proud for all of us and all the hard work he's put in to make this happen.
And we're blessed to have the public's backing, because this is all private funds. That's what's special about it. You know, it's important. We certainly have the leadership support and the legislature support. We're blessed with that. We also have the support of the citizens of Texas, and this is and that's a perfect example of them coming through with the funds necessary to honor our fallen and their families. So,
yeah, on a special note, I would want to extend our appreciation to the efforts of the Ranger 2023, the Bicentennial of Texas Rangers, as well as the DPS Foundation in making that funding available in addition to many other donors. So we thank them for that. It would not have happened without Director McCraw's commitment to it, his desire to get it done, but at the end of the day, we needed the money, and those people came through, so we thank them for that.
That concludes my comments, Chairman and Commissioners.
Any other questions? Okay, before we move on to new business, I want to recognize people with us here today. We have Trent Peroya with Governor Abbott's office, Suzanne Tomlin and Megan Mueller from Lieutenant Governor Patrick's office, Shelby Sterling and Jenna Trevino from the Senate Border Security Committee, Matt Ruschak with Chairman Ryan Gein's office, and online we have Representative Retta Bowers, Eva Saman with Senator Kelly Hancock's office, and Kelsey Vela from the LBB. So thank you all for being here or participating online. We appreciate that. Moving on to items 8 on the agenda, new business. We'll go to item A, final determination in contested cases, consideration and possible action on proposals for decision, and I will turn that over to General Counsel Phil Adkins.
Good morning, Commission. We have 3 contested cases coming to you for a final determination today. They're all from the Vehicle Inspection Program. And the first case involves Inspector Michael Conover. A covert audit revealed inspection violations, specifically failure to perform a gas cap test. The ALJ recommended an administrative penalty of $500. The second case involves Inspector Mohammed Hashmi. A covert audit revealed a failure to inspect all items and failure to perform gas cap test. ALJ recommended a 12-month suspension and a $500 administrative penalty. This was an enhanced penalty due to a prior administrative violation. The third case involves Mohammed Rahal. An investigation of emissions data revealed multiple failures to perform emissions testing or clean scanning. The ALJ recommended a 12-month suspension and a $500 administrative penalty. I request that the Commission adopt the proposal for decision issued by the administrative law judges as its final determination in each of the cases on the agenda this morning.
I move that we adopt those.
And
recommendations.
I we have a motion from Commissioner Blair and a second from Commissioner Wainwright that we adopt the proposals for decision on Section 8A of our agenda. Number 1, in the case regarding Michael Conover. Number 2, in the case of Mohammed Hashmi. And number 3, in the case of Mohammed Rahal.
Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Now on to item B, report, discussion, possible action on the following rule proposals for publication to receive public comment. I'll turn both of those items over to Chief Wayne Miller.
Chairman, Commissioners, good morning. Wayne Muller, Chief Regulatory Services Division. Items one and two are both, they're connected to one another and they both relate to the vehicle inspection program. As we can continue to combat fraud within the program, clean scanning, as you're well aware of, the criminals continue to become more and more sophisticated. And one of the common themes that we're continuing to see is that they're not necessarily conducting the criminal activity at the station themselves. They're moving the analyzers to different locations. As evidenced as recently as search warrants that were executed in an ongoing case we have in the Houston area by our regulatory crimes unit in conjunction with HPD and our teammates in CID, an individual with an analyzer machine, a laptop, a simulator device, and a list of VINs can conduct this criminal activity from the comfort of their kitchen table. So in effort to combat the rules that we have for you today, we're going to require all, the proposed rules will require all emission stations to have a static IP address as part of what they get from their internet service provider. Of course, they already have to have internet connectivity in order to upload the vehicle inspection data to TIMS, which is the TCEQ database. This will require them, again, to have a static IP address, which then will be on file with us and associated with that analyzer machine. And so between us and TCEQ, then if suddenly we see activity and uploading data coming from a different IP address, we will be able to act that much more quickly and take the appropriate enforcement action. So item one requires them to have the static IP address as part of their internet connectivity. And then item two is the consequence, the penalties and the penalty metrics if someone fails to have and fails to follow this requirement that we've now put in number one. So with that, Chairman, I would request a consideration of the commission that approval to have this placed in the Texas Register for the requisite public comment period.
Mr. Chairman, I so move.
I'll second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Wainwright and a second from Commissioner Blair to publish in the Texas Register for public comment proposed amendments to 37 TAC section 23.55 concerning certified emissions inspection and inspector requirements and 37 TAC section 23.62 concerning violations and penalty schedule. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you, Chief. And I'll just ask you to stay there. We'll item C on the agenda is intelligence threat briefing. We'll handle that in our executive session. Moving on to item 9, ongoing business report, discussion, possible action. I'm sorry, possible adoption of the following previously published rules. Item 1, Chief Mueller.
Thank you again, Wayne Muller, Chief Regulatory Services Division. Brought this item to you at the last commission meeting. This has to do with the license to carry program. By statute, there are some designations that go on the front of the license to carry card, a veteran, judge, and a couple of other items. There was a bill last session that was authored by Senator Birdwell that now allows court clerks to carry, if the individual has an LTC, to carry in an otherwise prohibited location, i.e. the courthouse, which caused some conversation about do we need court clerk designation on the front of the cards as well. Ultimately, the decision was that we would just add into the rules a listing of all the items, and that is what we have done here. I can tell you Senator Burwell's office is in support of this change. Otherwise, we did not receive any other public comment on the item. So at this time, I would request your consideration of adoption of it so that may be placed in the Texas Administrative Code.
Also move.
I'll second it.
We have a motion from Commissioner Blair and a second from Commissioner Long to adopt the proposed amendments to 37 TAC section 16.17 concerning designations under item 9A1 of the agenda. Is there any further discussion?
Quick question, Chairman. And court clerk is in the list.
Yes, it is now. There's five total now, a veteran, judge, instructor, protected person, and now court clerk.
Thank you.
One other question, Mr. Chairman. When we say court clerks, what does that include? Is that the district clerk, or is that the clerks for each of the judges?
It would be that person that has been elected or appointed.
Just one group of those.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what is covered with the designation court clerk. Just curious.
Yeah, it would be the individual that has been elected or appointed into district clerk, court clerk individual, as opposed to, for example, somebody that's in works in that office would not be able to fall under this, such as somebody that works in the judge's office would not be able to get the judge designation.
Okay, thank you.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you, Chief. Item B under Section 9 of the agenda, report, discussion, possible action regarding the modification of the DPS organizational structure and the appointment, promotion, ratification, employment, evaluation, reassignment duties, discipline, or dismissal of a member of the department or commission management team. Director McCraw, do you have anything for us?
Nothing to report. Request.
Thank you. Item C under ongoing business, report, discussion, possible action regarding ongoing criminal investigations pursuant to Government Code Section 411.0041. We will handle that in executive session as well. Moving on to item 10 on our agenda, reports. Are there any commission members wishing to give a report? Chief Whittington, do you have a report for us? Chief Melvin, do you have a report for us? Any other division reports for today?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, Jason Hester, Chief in Infrastructure Operations, wanted to give a quick update on our Williamson County Tactical Training Facility. We closed on the additional 135 acres next door, and so that was officially done on Friday of last week, so we now own that. The Texas Facilities Commission assisted us with that. They've been great partners in helping us go through all the legal requirements for that. My thanks to Commissioner Long helping us through on this project as well as we continue to move forward. We're starting to have our conversations with TFC on the planning of that. They have posted the solicitation for bids, for construction manager bids. That should close, I believe, in May, June timeframe. We expect that award to be done in September. And then we start having the conversations with whoever the firm that's chosen to start doing the construction. So just want to provide you an update on that. And any questions?
Thank you very much. I just wanted to mention to the commission, too, just this is huge, getting this other piece of land out there. It really is. It's going to save. We're going to spend some money and then save a ton of money and make it better for our trainees out there at the training facility, too. They were looking at an original plan of baffling and, you know, the whole firing range out there, which I don't think anybody was a fan of, but it needed to be done if we were going to do it. But now this land, I think, is going to save us a ton of money and just make it a better training facility out there at the end of the day. So I just wanted to, other commission members to be aware of that.
I would just add to that, I want to thank the legislature and the governor for their forward thinking on this project. The Williamson County facility will be of great importance to DPS, and we are very appreciative for that support.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other chiefs wishing to give a report? All right, we'll move on to Section 11 of the agenda, consent items. Colonel Martin, do you have anything for us?
Yes, sir, Chairman. The item has been reviewed and recommend approval.
Okay. I entertain a motion on the consent items.
So moved.
I second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Blair and a second from Commissioner Wainwright to approve all items under Section 11 of the agenda, the consent items. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Moving on to item 12 of our agenda, items for future agenda. Commissioners, please get with Sophie or Phil on any items that you may have for the next meeting. Item 13. Date for our future meeting, the discharge hearings will be scheduled for June 12, 2024, and the regular Public Safety Commission meeting is scheduled for June 13, 2024. The Public Safety Commission will now go into closed session at this time pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act, Chapter 551, to consider matters authorized to be considered in executive session under Government Code Section 551.071, 072, 073, 074, 076, and Government Code Section 411.0041. The time is 11:41 a.m. The Public Safety Commission has ended a closed session and is now reconvened as a quorum in open session. The time is 1:05 p.m. If there's no further business, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
I second.
We We have a motion from Commissioner Wainwright and a second from Commissioner Stodgill to adjourn the meeting. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Have a great day.